Did we talk about Kingsman 2 at all?
Julianne Moore is a villain.
Halle Berry, isn't it? Yeah. Halle Berry.
Coming to the States.
Yeah, coming to America.
How do you raise the stakes? Because you can't just ignore the events of the first movie. So many people died.
Yeah, a lot of people did die.
A lot of people. A lot of bad people. The president.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Maybe be a new president. Barack Obama died.
Yeah, he's the president. That's who I was referring to.
Yes, exactly. But, I mean, it's not just a guy. It's, you know, it's Barry Obama.
Yeah. I do want him to be Han Solo, though.
Barack Obama?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's got to do something.
I know, right? He's, like, out of a job. Like, Schwarzenegger got back in movies when he was not the governor anymore, so, like...
God, how awesome would it be to just see Obama just become a movie star?
He could be, like, the next Nick Fury. That'd be great.
Denzel. Just have him do it. Yeah. Like, him and Denzel do a buddy cop movie.
That would be amazing.
I would love it.
You could do, like, a Lethal Weapon spinoff. Because Obama already looks old, you know what I mean? Like, but he's already too old for this shit, you know what I mean? And he looks like it. So that'd be great. Oh, like Lethal Weapon, but of presidents. So Barack Obama takes young Bernie Sanders under his wing. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Everyone gets old, but not everyone grows up. My adult child counterpart, Mr. Dave Becella.
Let it go.
That's Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies on Up. Please don't let go of this episode yet. Everyone gets old, not everyone grows up is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, we'd love to hear about it in one of the three following ways. You can send your guests to us via email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your guests at us at moviesonup on the Twitter or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct and if we choose you, you will get a prize package full of, I was going to say full of adult-oriented material, but it's not. So, like, don't get your hopes up. There's
maybe young adult-oriented.
Yes. Yeah, probably. There's, like, some pictures in there and maybe a movie, but, like, don't expect, like, a Hustler magazine or anything like that because, I mean, I don't give those away. If I buy them, they're certainly for me. For you, this week is an episode full of our five favorite Charlize Theron movies as The Huntsman Winter's War comes out this week. And I guess we didn't feel like doing a Chris Hemsworth themed episode. So.
I feel like we've done, well, could we do a Hemsworth
episode?
We've
done favorite movies Marvel starring, movies, yeah, but
I don't
not.
Think I don't think I could do a top five Hemsworth. It'd be,
I like Drive. That was good.
It'd be Thor, Avengers, Avengers 2, Ragnarok would be, or the Dark Elves movie.
Yeah.
Thor 2.
Yeah,
Dark World.
Yeah.
That would be probably an also ran Cabin in the
Cabin
Woods.
Cabin in the Woods, yeah. Yeah. Joss Whedon asking him, why aren't you Thor?
In reality, though, like, why?
But would the first Snow White and the Huntsman, would that be on there? Did you like that?
It was okay. It was better than it should have been.
I didn't see it.
It wasn't good enough for me to be as excited for this movie as I am.
I'm probably not going to see this either.
I think it looks cool. I like Theron. I love Chastain. I love Emily Blunt. It looks
Nick Frost.
Pretty. Nick, he's one of the dwarves. The dwarves
yeah, I mean,
are weird in these
I'm just
movies.
Looking.
It looks epic. I'm kind of on board for this movie.
Even the first one. It was one of those deals where you go to the mall and they give you $3 to watch a trailer about 9 million times. And, I mean, I like $3, so whatever. I watched the trailer for the first one a lot, and it did seem very Lord of the Rings-esque, and I like
they
that.
They tried. I mean, they did a decent job world building. It just, Kristen Stewart was there for a paycheck. Pretty much. So, like, they tried to build the movie around her, and she was the weakest part because she had her mind other places during the filming of that. The director had
his
mouth
other
places.
Some things other places.
But, like, it was a competent
movie. Her vagina.
It was a competent movie. Like, it was okay. This one looks really good. No Kristen Stewart. No director.
No that guy.
No that guy.
Yeah.
It looks pretty solid. In hindsight, though, this episode could have been, we could have combined the three female leads and done a Theron, Chastain, and Emily Blunt, our favorites among those three. But in planning, I thought, oh, Charlize Theron's had a pretty awesome career. She'll be easy to make a top five for.
I found five.
Here's the thing. I found five, and I have a handful of also-rans. I like a good bit of Charlize Theron movies. I love
One, at least.
Maybe two. I love two Charlize Theron.
I'm trying to see
movies.
What my number two is.
I like...
Our number ones are the same.
Probably. Or what you're thinking is my number two.
Yeah. I'd be shocked.
The stuff she's in, because here's the thing, is the stuff on the list, I mean, my favorite movie that she's been in. She's not really in?
Yeah.
So I didn't count it.
I counted it.
That's fine. Like, this is a weird one, because, hey, do you like Charlize Theron? Yeah, without hesitation. Yeah, I do.
It's like the inverse Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. I love a lot of Marky Mark
movies. What was the last actor one we did that we had the same problem? We thought...
We did Goodman.
Was it John Goodman?
It was hard to find.
I feel like there was somebody post-Goodman that we were like, oh, this is going to be easy because we really like their stuff. Yeah, it was Jake Gyllenhaal. And we certainly like Gyllenhaal. We certainly gave that impression a month ago or whenever it was.
Like
we
past
did that.
4 years, Gyllenhaal.
Right. But he's a name that when you hear it, or at least when we hear it, oh, yeah, of course, this is not going to be a problem to have five movies that we really, really like. And truthfully, I thought Charlize Theron would be the same thing. I like all of my movies. The five I have, I really like. I don't have any problem with them being on here, with the possible exception of my number one, which if when I tell you what it is, you're going to be like, wait a minute, what the hell? She's not in that. And then I'm going to be like, yeah, she is.
Oh, see, okay. Then we don't have the
no,
same
you
number
left
one.
It off.
Because I left it off. But it would have been my number one.
Of course.
If I counted
Which is
it.
Why I put it at number one, because I was like, well.
One thing going through her filmography trying to figure out what I liked, she's always made interesting choices. Mm-hmm. She never let herself fall into,
she doesn't get pigeonholed, that's for sure.
Yeah, she never let herself fall into like, okay, I'm gonna have this span where I'm gonna lead three or four romantic comedies right. in a 4 or 5 year span. Never did that.
No. She's got action, she's got sci-fi.
I mean, just the day of recording this, which was I don't know, a couple weeks or last week, whenever,
which is today,
she just got announced she's the villain in Fast and Furious 8. That's a cool turn for her. So I respect her career. I really like it. Her parents, I think her mother murdered her father. That's not slander because I'm saying it with a question mark at the end. There's something weird with her parents in South Africa. I think one of them murdered the other one. It might have been in self-defense. As we go on, I'm going to look into that because I'm really interested now, and I hope that's true because that's really interesting.
Was
if it is.
Father Oscar Pistorius?
In that case, he would have murdered the mother.
Yeah.
But she's South African. I've never heard her speak with an accent, like in any of her movies. What does Charlize Theron sound like to you? Have you ever
heard her? She sounds like a white lady.
Have you ever heard her real voice?
No, I've never. She's not like Sholto Copley or anything like that where I'm like, oh, he's clearly from a place that isn't America. He's South African, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she doesn't sound like everyone in Chappie, which is like my go-to.
Thank God. Thank God.
That's my go-to. That's how cultured I am. Well, I know they have those horns from the World Cup that sound like a million angry bees and Chappie. That's it. Oh, yeah, and apartheid. That was not good. That was like the bad part of their culture. But Chappie and Vuvuzela's good.
On 21st of June, 1991, Theron's father, an alcoholic, physically attacked her mother and threatened both her and her mother while drunk. Theron's mother then shot and killed him. The shooting was legally adjudged to have been self-defense, and her mother faced no charges. So I did not make that up. Her mother killed her father.
Where did you find that on?
The most
internet?
Reliable website.
Wikipedia.
Yes.
All right.
I actually just edited that in there.
Checks in the mail.
So that's what's the episode this week?
That's a lot of origin story on Charlize Theron.
Because I don't want to talk about any of these movies.
I'm desperate to hear what your number five is. Because I'm afraid it's going to be a movie that's on my list, and you're just going to be like, oh, this movie's not so good. I don't really like it. It's a movie. And then I'm going to have to be like, oh, I really do like it. I like it for
mine's,
the following reasons.
Mine's fitting that it's the first one on the list because it's the first thing I've ever seen her in. It was kind of her breakout, I guess. Not breakout. It was kind of her... I think it was one of her bigger roles to begin with. It was 2 Days in the Valley from 1996, written and directed by John Hertzfeld. It's an ensemble movie. You got Danny Aiello, Jeff Daniels, Terry Hatcher, Peter Horton, Marsha Mason, James Spader, Eric Stoltz, Keith Carradine. There's a lot of people in this movie. It's one of those where there's a lot going on. There's different storylines that are all intersecting and everything. I've always been a big crime movie guy. And this is one of those that in 96, like that was when I was just getting into them. So I remember seeing a commercial for 2 Days in the Valley on Showtime and just being amped. And I wrote down when it premiered on there so that I could stay up and watch it.
You didn't set your DVR?
No, the thing didn't exist then. I remember watching it. She's good in it. It's a smaller part, but I remember thinking, like, there's a lot of people in it in 96. Some of those are bigger names. But she stood out. And I thought, that girl's going to have a good career.
That kid's got some talent. Which is weird, because it's the same thing I thought in a movie just the following year. Taylor Hackford's 1997 The Devil's Advocate, starring Keanu, Al Pacino, and Charlize Theron. I actually have love for this movie for a similar reason that I have love for Point Break. Not just because they're both Keanu Reeves, but because as over the top as Keanu is in both of those movies, his co-star in the film almost requires it. 1997 is well into the shouting Pacino phase.
Pacino as the devil?
Yes, which is phenomenal. That's great casting. I'm sounding snarky here by saying shouting Pacino, blah, 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 Keanu, Point Break. But I really like this movie. It's right in that vein where you had these two, much like Keanu and Busey in Point Break, trying to out-crazy each other. And it works. Like, they're some kind of two yangs, but somehow they balance. I don't understand it, but it's great. It's the movie equivalent of watching a train wreck, but a really interesting one.
It works.
Yes. And I actually think the movie's pretty decent. Admittedly, it's probably a little bit preachy. The idea of...
It's not subtle.
No. The idea of selling your soul to achieve professional success, it's not a unique theme, but it's probably never been more literally depicted than in this movie, where, spoiler alert, you do find out at the end, Al Pacino is the devil. Near the end of the movie, before you find out that Pacino is the devil, I think that Theron actually has a really good scene. She knows there's something not quite right about Keanu's new boss and the new life that they're living, and she ends up in a nut house, and she's just batshit out of her mind crazy. But that scene,
glass.
She's really amazing in. She's good throughout kind of the entirety of the movie. She's like...
She doesn't have a lot to do.
No. No, she's sort of like the grounding to this story.
And she, you have to be when you have...
Right.
Based on what Keanu and Pacino were doing, she's a welcome change. She didn't have to throw in a lot of flair.
She was good. She did exactly what she needed to do. And in sort of the chances she got to shine, I thought she did. And I thought to myself, that kid's going to have a nice career.
Yeah, this was much higher on my list.
Oh.
Because when I say there's only...
Oh, no.
When there's only two Charlize Theron movies that I think I could rave about...
That's one.
This is one of them. So,
you don't have to switch it. We can talk about it again later.
We'll say it's my number four.
Okay.
But this one, I legit like the movie.
Yeah.
It's a time capsule. Like, it feels like a movie from 97. You get peak Keanu. At that time, you get peak Pacino. But it's fun to watch. Like, it's really, really fun. It's not a fun movie, but it's way more fun than it should be. The subject material isn't something that's like, oh, that's going to be a romp. But there's something about watching them off of each other, and there's enough of a story to follow it and enjoy it. I legit love this movie.
Pacino's a great devil.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the absolute charisma to pull that role off, and he does. He could be acting opposite a shoe, and it wouldn't matter because he's that damn good.
Which he kind of did in this movie.
What?
But yeah, so that was my number four.
My number four, again, it's not a romp. It's kind of heavy. I've only seen it once, and that was enough. As far back as I can remember... It's maybe one of the more critically acclaimed movies I have on my list. It's Lassie Hallström's 1999 Cider House Rules, starring Spider-Man, Charlize Theron, and Alfred, Michael Caine. It's a very, very heavy movie. You've got orphans, you've got abortions, you've got incest, murder, creeping around in relationships, and some really, really good performances surrounding Tobey Maguire. He's good in the movie, but I think everyone else around him really, really stands out. Michael Caine obviously is amazing. And Paul Rudd showing up in a dramatic role I thought was pretty serviceable. Charlize Theron's sort of the de facto love interest in the movie. There's a weird triangle between her and Paul Rudd and Toby in the movie. And I think she actually manages to have some pretty good chemistry with Tobey Maguire, which is not something you usually say about him or about his movies. He's not exactly known for having this heartthrob role, but I think she pulls it off pretty good here. The movie's filled with characters doing some really crappy things, a lot of which I mentioned earlier, and it kind of paints a somewhat bleak picture of the world as Maguire leaves this abortion clinic slash orphanage to go out in the world and realizes it's just about as shitty as the abortion clinic slash orphanage that he came from. So I guess the moral of the story is life sucks everywhere, so it's better to dance with the devil you know. You see what I did there? Just calling it back.
This one, I know I've seen it, but
this is your number one.
For some reason, Cider House Rules, Wonder Boys, and Squid and the Whale are like all combined into one movie for me, and I don't know why.
I'm not sure either.
Because they're completely different movies. I know Absolutely. One of them, a little boy jerks off in the school and wipes it on the library books. The other one,
can't tell you which one that is.
Robert Downey Jr. is gay and in love with a dude, and then I think somebody falls down the steps. And then Cider House Rules has Tobey Maguire in it. I don't know why I associate those three movies together, but Charlize Theron was probably really good in this, so I will take your word for it. My number three, we mentioned Marky Mark earlier, so it's fitting. My number three is a Mocky Mock movie with Joaquin Phoenix and Charlize Theron from the year 2000. It is The Yards, written and directed by James Gray. Your Boston crime movie. Marky Mark gets out of jail, gets suckered into some stuff that he doesn't want to be in. That's your movie. Joaquin's there. Charlize is good. This is before I took Marky. I mean, this is when Marky Mark was like breaking as a movie star, and this was a smaller movie. So this was like Three Kings, Perfect Storm, Planet of the Apes, and then this little almost direct-to-DVD movie, which was odd. I stumbled across it just by chance because Joaquin wasn't blowing up by just then. And Charlize, her rise, this is right around Monster? Was it Monster?
'03.
Okay, so this is pre that. So it's a crime movie, so I was into it. It's a Boston movie, which whatever, but Mocky Mock, Joaquin Phoenix.
I see what you're doing there.
It was enough. It was my number whatever we're on. It was my number four, but now I think it's my number three. Way more than Devil's Advocate.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's this little direct-to-DVD Boston film. I think if we had any listeners in the Northeast, like they've probably been so turned off by your accent that they're just like, I got to get out of here. My number three is maybe a little bit of a stretch. Not that she's not in it, because she is, but it is a HBO movie, which we've done that before. We've put HBO movies on lists. And by we, I mean Dave's done it. So I feel like he can't call me out on that. It's from 2004. It's The Life and Death of Peter Sellers, directed by Stephen Hopkins, starring Jeffrey Rush as the aforementioned Peter Sellers, Charlize Theron, and Emily Watson. I don't necessarily love biopics, but when they're about actors or directors, or even if they're a movie about the making of a movie, I tend to change my tune and like those things a lot. Dave and I both love Ed Wood because Johnny Depp does a phenomenal job portraying this eccentric genius, and genius maybe you can use in air quotes, but a guy who really loved movies and he loved what he was doing. Similarly, Rush, I think, does an outstanding job of capturing one of the best character actors, at least of his generation, in Sellers. I would admit that the movie may not be the most accessible, particularly if you don't know much about Sellers or his work. And as we get further on down the line, that's probably going to be more and more the case, which is a shame. But for folks that do appreciate his work, even years after his death, it kind of gives you a look into how he worked as a human being and how he was able to do what he did. And what he did much better than most. I also really, really like the casting in this. Stanley Tucci plays Stanley Kubrick, and he's wonderful. Charlize Theron plays Peter Sellers' second wife, Britt Eklund. And Theron is a much better actress than Britt Eklund ever was. But she's just as stunning, so it works out there. All around, I think the movie is wonderfully acted. And to me, this is another instance where she keeps up. At this point, she's already got Oscar love. But she keeps up with a giant cast like the Cider House Rules. This featured her a little bit more.
My number two-ish, it's from 1999. This is when she was starting to break. This was like her first lead role, I believe, because she did carry 1999's The Astronaut's Wife, written and directed by Rand Ravitch, starring her and Johnny Depp, Nick Cassavetes, Clea DuVall. It's one of those movies, I remember it being okay, if I rewatched it, it's probably pretty bad. I remember thinking the ideas were good in it, where Johnny Depp's in space with Nick Cassavetes. They lose contact with Earth for 2 minutes. They return safely, but then...
Or so we
think. They're both acting kind of weird. It is a Charlize Theron movie. Johnny Depp gets top billing, his face right there on the poster, but it's all through Theron's eyes, and it's her becoming more and more suspicious of her husband. It's an X-Files episode, essentially. Just feels like Mulder and Scully took the week off, and instead we got Theron and Depp. Again, I saw it right when it came out, and I haven't seen it since, but I remember thinking, like, oh, there's some good stuff here.
I'm going to remember this for 20 years
down
the
road. And
the
sad thing is, I have the DVD. I rented it from Hollywood Video years ago, and I still have it.
Eat that Hollywood Video.
Yeah,
come get me now.
I did have it. Jason West, I think, made a DVD cover for it, and the movie description was just, dude goes into space, dude's wife gets pissed. and that sums up the movie, essentially, plus with some supernatural extraterrestrial elements. But she's really good in it.
Take my word for it. My number two is a movie that I'm told she's really, really good in as well. It has been mentioned already once or twice on this show. It is from 2003, Patty Jenkins' Monster, starring, of course, Charlize Theron, Christina Ricci, and Bruce Dern. I don't think that this movie started the trope of uglying up an actress to win an Oscar, but for some reason, it seems to be the poster child for that movement.
Christian Bale's favorite movie.
This is? I think it actually really does a disservice to Theron, who really did a good job in this movie portraying one of the most infamous female serial killers of all time. Of course, the makeup department did a great job turning Theron into an aging, busted down, trash bag prostitute. That just covers the visual part of that, which is part of the performance for sure. Had this been a silent film, I guess you could give the argument that, oh, well, it's just because she did a physical transformation that she won the Oscar. It would have some validity if she didn't actually have to speak and act and emote in the movie, which she does, and I think she does wonderfully. Up until this movie, it was my opinion that nobody did white trash quite as good as Juliette Lewis. But after seeing Ricci in this movie, I think she was Lewisian in her level of trashdom. I actually think that she probably could have deserved a little more consideration for this movie. I don't even think she got Golden Globe nominations for this, but of course, this movie was pretty much Charlize Theron. Everything else was sort of secondary. It's still the first movie that comes to mind when I think about her, and for good reason. I mean, she was phenomenal in it. The movie's okay. It's one of those ones that you're really just watching for one or two performances. I think Christina Ricci's really good in it as well. She's pretty engaging. But, I mean, if you're watching this movie, it's either because you don't want to read a book about Eileen Wuornos or you just, I don't know, want to see a good performance.
This is like the epitome of great performance movie.
Yeah.
My number one, I legit love this movie. A lot of people hate it. It gets a lot of crap. It's subject of a lot of think pieces along the way. It is from 2008, directed by Peter Berg, written by Vincent Ngo and Vince Gilligan of Breaking Bad fame. It is Hancock, starring Will Smith, Charlize Theron, Jason Bateman. A lot comes from this movie. The script, I believe it was called Tonight He Comes, was a blacklist script, was a dark take on a superhero where Hancock is a superhero who's now just an alcoholic, he's clumsy, he doesn't care about anything. Kind of tackles the Man of Steel thing long before Man of Steel, because the city kind of hates him, because when he saves the day, he just causes damage nonstop. He causes millions of dollars of damage. Enter Jason Bateman as a PR guy who thinks he can change it. I like the movie. I do see the issues. I do see that it was turned from this dark take on an alcoholic superhero movie into a popcorn movie. But Will Smith is really good in it. Like, I think Will Smith is fantastic as Hancock. Jason Bateman is really good to play off of that. Bateman's strength is playing the kind of character he was in this. Charlize Theron, really, really good, plays Bateman's wife who does not want Hancock around, and as the movie progresses, you understand why.
She's a cock blocker.
Yeah, herself. kind of. Yeah. But it's there are moments in this movie that I think are great. And I think at the end, Hancock trying to get out of the hospital, getting shot, and just the running down the hall to try to get out of the hospital to get away to save Charlize Theron's character. I think it's done really, really well. And Peter Berg has had a roller coaster career is one way to say it.
He's had his hits and misses.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yeah. He got a lot of the blame for this. And I feel like this hurt him a lot in a way. He's turning it around now. But I like what came out of this movie. I would much rather see a Tonight He Comes movie and see a movie from that script. But I don't think it turned into a train wreck that everybody made it out to be. I don't know why this movie got so much hate when it came out. It's exactly what it's advertised, because it was marketed as, hey, Will Smith's a drunk asshole superhero. And that's what you got? Maybe I'm just biased. I don't know. Maybe I like Will Smith and Bateman enough.
I think fans of Will Smith went into this thinking that he was basically going to be playing Superman. And then when he wasn't Superman, you know what I mean? Like the truth, justice in the American way. Like,
but I mean, that it was advertised that way.
It was advertised, but I still think that you had to be paying attention to the advertising to realize that was the case. From what I remember about it, was certainly that it was a superhero movie. And certainly he was not exactly like the world's greatest superhero. That maybe, you know, he was just not very good at his job. It wasn't because
he was the only one.
Right. It wasn't because he was a dysfunctional person. It was just because, like, you know, he's not a polished superhero. And I think that's really the impression, that if you're just taking everything at face value, that's what you got. And if you wanted to bring, this was not necessarily a movie to bring kids to, but if you were thinking, oh, Will Smith, that's great family entertainment, we're going to go see Will Smith play a version of Superman, you were probably very disappointed with Hancock. If this movie came out now, when we've seen heroes be...
I mean, who wants a dark and brooding emo Superman? Nobody, right?
Batman's kind of cornered the market on that at this point, but...
Not so fast.
Not so fast, my friend.
Says Zack Snyder.
I think this movie would be much more well-received now than it was then.
I mean, and there is cheesy stuff. The heart on the moon at the end, like, I could do without that. But I will shill for this movie. I will defend this movie. I think... if you hated it when it came out, if you go in with no expectations and you rewatch it, I think you'll see a lot of what you missed. And I legit think it's a popcorn movie. Like, it's a fun, just shut your brain off, enjoy the performances, because Will Smith is damn charming. Jason Bateman is damn charming. Charlize Theron brought it. I mean, she was really the only one that had to, like, bring any sort of depth to a character and bring emotional, like, heavy hitting. And who else do you want to do that other than her? Like, she's proven time and time again she can bring that balance. So it's a lot of fun. I'll watch it if it's on. It's on TBS all the time because they're very funny. That and Hitch are on all the time. I'll watch either
Will
one
Smith
of them
owns TBS.
I'll watch any one of them anytime. This one I like, though. Hitch is more of an inside joke that I'll watch it just for the putting the pin in Kevin James's pocket. That part kills me every time. But this movie I legit love. They should re-release it or something. Remake it with the original script. I don't care. I think there's a lot of good there that I think a lot of people missed out on purpose, maybe. I feel like people wanted to hate this movie when it came out, and they just did, as a side effect of just wanting to. I'll defend it. I don't care.
This is a very insidious plot of people wanting to hate a movie.
It was one of those that it got a lot of bad press leading up to it. I feel like a lot of people's
poisoned
minds were made up before they saw it, and it's not a perfect movie. Nobody's going to claim it that, but it wasn't as good as it could have been, and I feel like people took that as being terrible when I disagree. I don't think it was. I think there's a lot of good in this movie. Basically, if you saw Hancock in 2008 and you hated it, rewatch it. I want to do a Hancock episode now. Let's do it.
Let's do it when Independence Day comes out.
The one that Will Smith's not in. Right. Done.
Apparently his character died in a plane crash between the two movies. I read that online. My number one actually is a perfect movie.
I think he died 9/11, actually.
He didn't die in 9/11.
Oh, then I heard it wrong.
He was testing alien technology.
I heard it wrong.
Died in that kind of plane crash. Yes, you heard it wrong.
I thought he died in that Robert Pattinson movie.
He did not.
You know which one I'm talking about.
Yes,
right? The one that's
I
just
do.
Like out of nowhere, it's a 9/11 movie.
Right.
Like, oh, hey, here's this teenage love movie. Oh, no, it's a 9/11 movie. Credits. That's it. That's how the movie is.
So if you want to check that one out.
Yeah, it's called Remember Me, or I don't know what it's called. It's
Remember Me.
Look at Robert Pattinson's filmography. You'll find it.
It's the one that's not Twilight.
It's not
or
Twilight.
Cosmopolis.
Yeah.
Or Harry Potter, for that matter. Which
he was really good.
I don't know. Was there a vampire in Harry Potter?
No. He was only in the one because he died, but he was really,
spoiler
really
alert.
Good in it. Sorcerer's Stone, which was my favorite one. It's probably my second or third favorite of all of them.
Is that the one with trade negotiations?
No, that's episode one.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. My number one would be Dave's number one, and I don't think he's going to argue with me when I say that it is a perfect movie. It is from 2009, John Hillcoat's The Road, starring Viggo and Cody Schmidt-McPhee. Trust me, Charlize Theron is in it. If you blink, you might miss her, though. It may be a bit unfair to her that my favorite movie is one that she's not really in all that much. She is an Oscar winner, as I mentioned from my number two. But all of the movies that she's been associated with, this is my favorite of them. So I feel like it's okay putting it number one on my list. It would be number one on probably a lot of lists. And I'm sure that it was number one for one of us, or both of us, I don't know, when we did our post-apocalyptic list. In terms of Charlize Theron and her post-apocalyptic movies, I think this one is much, much more plausible than the other one, which apparently was a really good movie, from what I understand. It's grounded, and I think it has heart. The movie is basically just a man and his son trying to stay alive. It's really the only thing that drives this movie is this man's love for his son. It's that brutal Viggo that we've come to appreciate and love.
That we haven't seen in a while.
No, we haven't seen in a while.
Saw it a bunch for a
yeah,
handful
Easter
of years,
Promises.
The History of Violence.
Yeah, those ones almost seemed like they were back to back. And
this was sprinkled in there.
Yeah, and then now he's, I guess, I don't know, kind of faded away to doing whatever it was that he was doing before Lord of the Rings. But certainly we can see brutality in post-apocalyptic movies, but what we don't necessarily see is that heart and this tangible concern that this guy had for his son, not wanting to basically endure one more loss. Emotion's not something that we usually see in a movie like this. That's why I think when we do see some attachment there, it seems to impact all the more because it doesn't feel like it doesn't belong in a movie like this. But I would say that an example of it to me in a smaller, just as impactful, but a smaller dosage, to bring up Will Smith again. I don't love I Am Legend, but you can't tell me that scene,
the dog.
Yes, exactly. Oh. That you don't remember Sam in that movie. Not to bring it as a downer, but that was a really good relationship in a post-apocalyptic movie. That's all he had. Now, Viggo, all he has is his son. So as much as Will Smith loved his dog, Viggo loves his son even just that much more. What's scary about the apocalypse is not
everything?
Well, it's everything, but if you boil it down, we as human beings are social creatures. We don't like to be alone. And after the apocalypse, presumably, there's not that many people roaming around. So you essentially are alone. And he did not want to be without his son. He didn't want to be without his wife either. But, you know, sometimes things are out of your hands. So basically, just to keep himself from being alone, he would go to any lengths to protect that kid. Not just what a father would do to protect his son, but there's that whole, this is literally all I have left in the world, and I'm going to be as hard-assed as I need to be to protect this. And a great movie. It's not exactly uplifting.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination, but it is a great movie.
No, this is fantastic. And John Hillcoat, I was amped for this because it's a fantastic book. It's a Cormac McCarthy novel, which almost comes off as unfilmable. It's one of those that when you read it, it's not really one.
Why would anybody sit through this?
Yeah, it's not really one you can picture as a movie. But he was following up The Proposition, which was a phenomenal movie starring Guy Pearce. That was a couple years prior to this. Lawless, I'll forget that happened. But Triple Nine was one of my most anticipated this year. I hate that I haven't seen it yet because I love Hillcoat. Even just from The Proposition and this movie, that's a director I want to see everything he does. It is a damn near flawless movie. It's not one you want to rewatch over and over again. It is Viggo and Cody Schmidt-McPhee. Like, this is Cody Schmidt-McPhee was, I mean, that dude went toe-to-toe with Viggo in this movie. Mm-hmm. And never held them back.
And there's nowhere else to look, so you can't hide them.
You can't hide them. So, I mean, that kid was awesome, and he's had a pretty solid career since then. I believe this was his introduction.
Yeah, I mean,
on a big scale.
Can't imagine he was doing much before that.
Yeah, it's just a good movie. I almost put it on there just because I didn't like enough of her movies, but I couldn't because she's in it. Does she even show up on screen? Like, I'm it's been a while. She shows up for like a split second, right? Okay,
it's
her voice a few times, mm-hmm. and then you see her for. Not long at all, but yeah.
That's it for our five favorite Charlize Theron movies. No mentions of Mad Max. No mentions of Prometheus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are some of my also.
I don't like either of those, really.
Mad Max I didn't hate, but I wanted to love it, and
yes.
I didn't.
Yes. I started to hate it once everybody else told me how good it was.
She was really good in it.
She's fine.
Like, she was... Her character was good. Prometheus... If you cut out the first hour of that movie, hour and a half of that movie, it's a fantastic
movie. That's one
movie.
That I wanted to love.
It's, oh, and we were so... That was our first like Movies on Up letdown, I think, because that was the first summer we did this.
Mm.
And we were both so amped for that and then just never spoke of it again.
But I'm still like, whatever the Prometheus sequel is with Fassbender chasing off after the aliens, like I'll still see that.
Well, it's him and Catherine Waterston. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Huntsman was okay. Young Adult...
Did not care for. Did not think it was. To me, Cameron Diaz did that movie. That was it. Bad Teacher.
Yeah.
And this to me seemed like, and I think
was
Bad
more
Teacher
to
came
it
first.
Than that.
Yes, there was, but it seemed like this was Charlize Theron's attempt at that, and
Written
I didn't
by
love
Diablo
it. Cody. Right, and that's strike
Cody.
2 and 3 in your book, but
I don't hate Diablo Cody. I think sometimes she gets it her own way. It had its moments, but it wasn't enough for me to put on a top five. And I had to put Reindeer Games on just because why wouldn't I? But yeah, those are my also-rans. Like, there's movies that she's a fine actress. She's a fantastic actress. I don't love most of what she's in except for Devil's Advocate and Hancock.
And The Road.
And The Road.
Which I'm pretty sure she's in. If we've left off your favorite Charlize Theron movie, we would love to hear about it in any of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can get our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet at us @moviesonup on the Twitter. Anything else you want to plug, Dave? I don't think you've done that for a while.
Check out createdweekly.com. It's just a website where I'm writing a new short story every week. My friend Fred is also contributing either a short story or a poem. And it's an open invite. If you write or you draw or you want to do anything artistic on a weekly basis, email us at createdweekly@gmail.com. Check it out. I'm pretty happy with a lot of my stories that are going up. Proud of the fact that we've made it so far and haven't missed a week. Most of the stories are at least 5 pages. Some of them are going up to 10 to 12. It all depends on how long I procrastinated. But I'm pretty happy. I've been on a tear where I'm hitting a string where I like more of them than I don't. So if you're bored, I mean, it's a lot. I know it's reading every week, but
I don't read.
Check it out, createdweekly.com, for cool short stories from me and then content from my buddy Fred and anybody else who wants to chip in. And if you want to chip in, let us know.
Check us out next week. We've got an action-packed sort of end of April, beginning of May. Next week, if you didn't know it, is the start of summer. And you can tell that not by leaves or baseball or any of that garbage. It's when we release our summer preview episode, and that will be next week. We'll tell you what to look forward to. Throughout this summer, there will probably be a mention of superheroes in there at least once or twice. There'll be a ton of mentions of superheroes the following week when we're going to take a look at Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and follow that up with our 4th anniversary episode, which I'm sure will spare no expense in the budget. We're just going to go balls to the wall on that one. So we've got certainly a couple of our bigger episodes of the year right around the corner. So hopefully you guys are as pumped about that as we were to record them, because we spent a lot of time putting stuff together for those.
We prepare so hard for 3 episodes a year and 2
of
them
take the rest
coming
of the year
up.
off. So until next week,
keep it up.